From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Elvis stole the spotlight, the Beatles closed the show. But in between, in the 1950s, American teens swooned to the super sweet pop music of Patti Page, Pat Boone, Connie Francis, and Fabian. Eisenhower was president, Brill Cream was cool, and true love waited just around the bend. When Newsweek rock critic Karen Schomer told her friends she was going to write about 50s teen pop, they told her she was crazy. But she had her reasons to understand how her parents fell in love and how they fell apart. This hour On Point, we're headed into the blue suede years of music's pre-Beatles puppy love. We'll talk with Patti Page and 50s teen idol Fabian and hot new star Nellie Mackay, who's tapping these old platters again, and with Karen Schomer on her journey into the music of the teen pop 50s. You can join the conversation. Does this music send you swooning or screaming from the room? And are you ready to listen again? What do you hear? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Albany, New York, is Karen Schomer, former pop critic for Newsweek magazine. Her new book is Great Pretenders, My Strange Love Affair with 50s Pop Music. Karen Schomer, thanks a lot for being with us.
Well, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
So I'm reading here. It's really funny. You said to your friends, I'm going to do a book on this. And they said, you know, one said, you're going to have to explain the numbing mediocrity with which you've chosen to surround yourself. What set you on this track?
Well, there were a number of things that sent me on this crazy journey. One of them was that as a rock critic, I was always trying to learn as much as I could about the music of the past. And I found that there was a lot of information out there about rock and roll pioneers like Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Richard. There was a lot out there about the blues. There was a lot out there about outlaw country music. There was a lot out there about soul and R&B. But what was hard to find was good writing about 50s pop music and teen idol music. And when you look at rock criticism, the way that rock history has dealt with this era has been either to ignore it or to malign it as some of the worst music ever made.
I mean, I have to say, I grew up in that era when it was seriously maligned, when this was something you just ran from at top speed, and everybody essentially agreed on it. It's, you know, maybe, I don't know who listened, but nobody that I knew. Before we go to what you listened to and what you heard, we better get a sense of you. What did you grow up listening to? What were you writing about when you turned to this?
Well, I came of age with rock and roll, and throughout my teens and 20s, I was listening to classic rock radio. Then I went into college radio. I was a big fan of indie rock. I was a huge fan of bands like Sonic Youth, The Replacements. And on into the 90s, I was a fan of Nirvana, The Breeders. Okay. So I really was shaped by loud guitars and aggression and getting your yah-yahs out. I was a big Stones fan. So I really loved rock and roll. And when I started listening to this stuff, it actually sounded so weird to me that it was appealing just in its incredible foreign weirdness. Boone really couldn't be further from Sonic Youth.
And appealing in its weirdness, sometimes wonderful weirdness. Connie Francis caught you early on. I want to keep this music in our ears as we talk with you, Karen Schomer, about Great Pretenders. Let's just get Connie Francis and hear what you have to say about it, dear rock critic. Here's Connie Francis, Where the Boys Are.
Smiling face, a warm embrace to
Okay, talk to us, Karen. What did that say to you, and how did it bring you back to your mother?
Well, that song slays me. Connie, first of all, her voice is so vulnerable and so strong at the same time. She has this incredible range, but she sounds as though her heart is really breaking and as if she's carrying the weight of the world. And the sentiment of the song is really the image of a teenage girl sitting alone in her room, pining for some dream boy. And I guess I shouldn't be too ashamed to admit that I lived through that as a teenager, and a lot of us girls out there remember that feeling. And she really brought me back to that sort of beautiful longing that you feel when you're a kid hoping for something good to come along down the road, something to rescue you from your boring day-to-day life.
He'll be there. The boys will be there. I'll climb the highest steeple, she sings, and tell the world he's mine. And you saw some echo of that in your mother's wedding day picture at a time when you were really thinking a lot about your parents.
That's true, and I guess that steeple that she was going to climb always sounded to me like a church steeple. So it all had to do with, when I get married, everything's going to be just perfect. My life will be set. I'll never have to worry about anything. Not just because my husband will take care of me, but because that's the goal for a lot of teenage girls, especially of the 50s. But I think a little bit of that lingers on. Connie physically reminded me of my mother. And when I started to look into the era and to research Connie herself, I realized that they were a similar age, similar Italian-American background, and raised in the suburbs of New York. And also, I had this photo hanging on the wall of the house when I was growing up, and it was a picture of my mother in her wedding gown. She got married in 1962, and unfortunately, when my parents divorced when I was a teenager, that it was sort of the shattering of that portrait, so to speak. And so when I saw this box set, it was a little bit, it was an opportunity to go back and look into my parents' past and to try to figure out what kind of forces brought them together and what might have been on their minds as teenagers.
To learn how they fell in love, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe learn something about yourself a generation later.
Yeah, the music being a window into the time.
You went out and you talked with a lot of the stars of that day. We're going to hear from some of them in this hour. Patti Page and Fabian. You talked to Pat Boone and Tommy Sands and Frankie Lane. And how did you define who you were interested in? You didn't go, you're not looking at Elvis here. You know, what was it? You really went for the schmaltz end of the scale? Or how did you define it?
I did. I was looking for music that was a little on the cheesy side. Cheesy is another word for hugely popular and commercial, and perhaps not something that you would critically place on the high end of the scale. So it might be music that was really meaningful but kind of fleeting, and perhaps not groundbreaking the way Elvis was, and perhaps not artistically definitive the way even some of Frank Sinatra's work was. More stuff that was just really popular, that kind of got people through the day.
How much is that doggy in the window from Patti Page? I mean, talk about not breaking through. Just some crazy stuff. I was listening to some of the things that you've written with the Cry of the Wild Goose. You know, my
so
heart
insane.
Knows what the wild goose knows,
I know.
And I must go where the wild goose goes. And songs like Mule Train, we're going to hear that in a minute, but what were these novelty songs? Why were people singing about mule trains in the 1950s?
I know. Well, that's one thing that also drew me into the era, was that we have this image of the 50s being so stodgy and conservative and repressive. And yet when I just couldn't imagine how a song like Mule Train would have been embraced and could have been number one for something like 8 weeks or 11 weeks. It was actually 1949 going on into 1950.
Did you figure it out? What was it about that mule train?
People just were completely insane in the 50s. They weren't boring at all. They were cauldrons of anxiety and craziness and insecurity. I found that very comforting.
And Americans kind of figuring out their own country again for the first time, maybe celebrating old images with the new technology of, you know, record players everywhere and people on top of them. We're talking with Karen Schomer this hour, former pop music critic for Newsweek magazine, about the teen pop music of the 50s. Her book is Great Pretenders, My Strange Love Affair with 50s Pop Music. We're going to hear very soon from Nellie Mackay, from Patti Page, from Fabian. Here is Frankie Lane with Mule Train. You can join the conversation. Does this music send you swooning or screaming from the room? Is it time to reconsider Connie Francis, Pat Boone, Frankie Lane, or have you already heard enough? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Karen Schomer, stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Black around the border, a pair of boots for someone who had been made the order, a Bible in the pack for the Reverend Mr. Black. Get along.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the teen pop music of the 1950s.
The Charlie had a teenage crush. They don't know how I feel. They call it a teenage crush. They can't believe this is real.
Tommy Sands there with Teenage Crush. We'll hear in a moment from Patti Page, from Fabian. My guest is a post-punk rock critic who went on the trail of this 50s music, the music of her parents' youth. Karen Schomer's book is Great Pretenders, My Strange Love Affairs with 50s Pop Music. You can join us. Was this your music? On the beach, in the back seat, on the 45 RPM rack? Are you hearing this music for the first time? What do you think? And what was going on in the sweet and cheesy music of the 50s? Did it mean that life was good, that life was desperate? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined right now from New York by Nellie Mackay, hot young singer, the Washington Post calls supremely gifted, charming, darkly funny. She's recorded two albums, Get Away From Me and the forthcoming Pretty Little Head. She'll be appearing on Broadway as Polly Peachum in the Threepenny Opera. She reviewed Karen Schomer's book for the New York Times last weekend. Nellie Mackay, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. You're hot. You're tapping into this. You call it a grossly underappreciated era in American music, and you're hot right now. What are you hearing this, Nellie?
Oh, well, in terms of record sales, they're much hotter than I will ever be.
Right.
You know, I hear so much in this music. I mean, I just think that, what people consider... cheesy or passe is, first of all, neither of those things, and is, second of all, so much better than what people consider really hip and with it right now.
You look at the seven artists that Karen Schomer profiled: Patti Page, Frankie Lane, Pat Boone, George Gibbs, Tommy Sands, Fabian, Connie Francis, and you write, all seven of these performers have more musicality in their pinky fingers than do truckloads of today's pop acts. Describe what you're hearing there, Nellie Mackay.
Oh, I just think a lot of heart and a lot of warmth, and just in terms of musicality, a sense of rhythm and melody that I don't know if it's a generational thing or if I don't know if there's something in the water, but I mean they were I think just they are extraordinary. And they bring so much to the music, whether it's something as a more novelty tune or something that is a standard. I think their records are wonderful.
Let's hear what you do with the echo of that era. Here's Nellie McKay singing I Want to Get Married from her CD Get Away From Me.
Yes, I need a spouse. I want a nice lever to beaverish, golden retriever, and a little white house. I want to get married. I need to cook meals. I want to pack cute little lunches for my Brady Bunches, then read Danielle Steele.
Okay, you've got us, and you've got us laughing out loud at the same time. That's Nellie McKay singing I Want to Get Married. Karen Schomer, Nellie reviewed your book. Review her kind of echo of the 50s here. Does this sound like what drew you to the 50s?
Definitely. Nellie has a... she's taking a ballad and adding a layer of wit to it, and she's taking this idea of eternal love and putting a nice twist on it. I think it's great.
Nellie, how much of your music is informed?
On the other hand, if she had given me a bad review, I might have a different review of her.
No, right. All I can hear when I hear that is that I had a cold that day, so I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And you know, I think it's wonderful that this book is you know, bringing this artist, these artists, as well as a very honest, personal history to light, you know.
But you know, for such a long time, Nellie, this music was just forbidden. Nobody wanted to hear it. I mean, the artists who sang it were in the wilderness for years.
But you do have a lot of, you know, people out there that for them, these artists are the pinnacle, and that nobody will can touch their place in their own minds. And I mean, that's touched on in the book too, that one's personal relationship with music is not always the same as you know, their place in rock music history, you know.
Karen.
I think also what Nellie is doing is sort of not happening in a vacuum either. And now that the 50s are actually half a century past, I think more young people today probably aren't coming at it with that baby boomer baggage that got handed down to me. And obviously the 50s are kind of rising up again. Barry Manilow just had a number one album.
American Idol is
covers.
Singing 50s songs.
American
lately.
Idols. And throughout the rock world, I think you're seeing a lot of performers embracing pop traditions, whether 50s or 60s. I've heard Sheryl Crow sing Burt Bacharach, and she just does a phenomenal job. Rod Stewart is doing pop standards. I think people are trying to synthesize those two movements, which were presented as polar opposites for so long, but now that some time has gone by, we can all look back and say they weren't so different, and there was real value in both the screaming rock and roll tradition and the sweet romantic pop tradition.
What a turnaround. I want to bring our listeners in. A lot of them want to join the conversation. Karen Schomer, Nellie McKay are with us. Margaret's calling from Douglas, Massachusetts. Hi, Margaret. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. I heard this and I had to pull off the road because my very first movie I got to go to with my girlfriends was Where the Boys Are.
Oh, yeah. Connie Francis singing it.
You know, what people can't realize is these were 45s. These records came out and we were the only ones buying them.
That is, teenagers were the only ones buying them. Your parents thought this was wild.
Well, they, you know, we'd go to slumber parties, you'd have them, they were different colors. I remember my father brought the first 45 we had, and it was the Sons of the Pioneers playing Cool Clear Water, and it was turquoise. And the first record I bought was something about UFOs landing, and it had clips of other songs played into it, and we would just sit and listen to this. people think the 50s were so boring. This was our internet, I guess.
Your internet. And do you miss it? Do you still listen it? Or is this bringing it back from the depths for you, Margaret?
It's like guilty secrets. When people my age get together, we all talk about this. Everything else has been revived. There's no I Love the 50s on, you know, VH1 or anything.
Yeah, but maybe the 50s deserve their own. Margaret, thanks so much for your call. Nellie Mackay, you write about the unspoken passion, the earnest preachers at the altar of puppy love. So does that have to be history? Can it still live? I mean, you're very ironic in the song that we heard from you there. You know, I
well,
want to get married.
Not necessarily. I mean, I think that song has a couple of different levels. I mean, it isn't just a humor song. I mean, I think it's also just, you know, pointing out that a lot of women still want to just get married and take care of the kitchen, you know, myself included at certain points in my life. It's not necessarily entirely ironic, but I really hope VH1 doesn't do a special on the 50s. They wouldn't get it at all.
What would they miss?
Oh, everything in VH1.
I like what Nellie just said, because I felt that way too. I felt like I was really beyond all that kind of stuff, but the truth was it was lurking deep down in there and kind of leaking out of me when I didn't expect it.
Nellie Mackay, it's just been great to have you today. I mean, the kudos coming your way are pretty wild, being compared with Johnny Cash, Carol Channing, Eminem, Rosemary Clooney, and Peggy Lee. You're onto something here. We're grateful to you for joining us.
Oh, please add Patty Page and Fabian.
Okay. we'll put them on your resume. We'll hear from them in a moment. Nellie Mackay, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thanks, both of you. Thank you. Bye.
Let me turn to Paul in Nashville.
I'm here.
Good. Paul in Nashville, what do you know?
Well, my point was going to be that the rock and roll and R&B that preceded it came out on independent labels. This was the popular music that the major labels were putting out for young people, and that's why it's about puppy love and westerns like Mule Train, which were acceptable for young boys to have as role models.
And so, is it good music? Is it a historical artifact? How do you look at it today, Paul?
I agree that it's very musical and it's very crafty, but I think in terms of the evolution of American popular music, the action was with rock and roll and R&B.
And are you listening to a comeback, or you're happy to let the 50s stay in the 50s?
Well, I'll be honest. I sell records at record shows, and I've got some very dusty Patti Page records and Fabian records that I'd love to sell.
Well,
oh, good.
It sounds like you might
sell
them soon. It sounds like you might soon if the comeback is what we hear,
that
Paul.
But they haven't moved in years.
Well, they may just. We'll speak to Patty and Fabian themselves in just a moment about that. Paul, thanks for calling from Nashville. I want to get the music of these next two artists in our ear. Let's start with Patti Page. Here is Patti Page singing, "I Don't Care If the Sun Don't Shine." Karen Schomer writes about her. She really sang it.
Sun contains ray, they label vitamin D. If you like vitamin D, it's quite all right with me. But I am here to say that I like vitamin love, but I can't get vitamin love with that doggone sun above.
There's Patti Page singing for Vitamin Love. She joins us right now from Solana Beach, California. Patti Page, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
We're great, and we're honored to have you with us. Thanks so
thank
much.
You.
You've been written up again by Karen Schomer. She came back looking. We'll hear from Fabian in just a moment. She tracked you down. You're still singing, Patti Page. You're 78 years old, and you're still doing it.
I am, and I'm still selling, by the way, that gentleman that just called.
Absolutely.
And you had paid for all those records.
If I'm not mistaken, you had a Grammy not that many years ago.
Yes, I did. My first one and only one so far.
1998. Patti Page, when you listen back to the songs that you sang in the 1950s, now you're 78 years old. It's almost half a century ago. What do you hear?
What did you say?
What do you hear in that music? The music that you sang that you were so prominent in at that time. Do you still like it? Does it sound to you like another world?
Well, No, it doesn't, because I've been doing it for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never stopped doing it. And the people still keep applauding, so I'm kind of happy with my career.
I guess you are, and it's done pretty well by you. I want to bring Fabian in as well. He joins us from Connellsville, Pennsylvania. Teen idol in the 1950s. Big hits include Tiger, Hound Dog Man, and Turn Me Loose. He was voted most promising vocalist in 1959. Film credits include High Time with Bing Crosby and The Longest Day with John Wayne and more. Let's get Fabian in our ear. Here's I'm a Man.
Honey, in the street so fine, I'm available for kissing any old time.
I'm a man.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah, I'm a man.
Oh, fuck. Oh, well, don't you forget that I'm a man. Like you treat me like.
Fabian, sir, are you there?
I certainly am.
Welcome. It's great to have you.
Male most promising singer by my mother and my two brothers.
and a whole lot of others. We know that very well. As Karen Schomer writes it, and the story is well known, you were a kid kind of plucked off a doorstep, as I understand it, and made into an incredible star.
Yeah, I mean, I was found under a rock, and it's a long story, but my father was very, very ill. The owner of Chancellor Records came along. He had a neighbor that lived right next door. We got to talking. He asked me if I wanted to be in the record business. I told him to go to hell. I was worried about my dad. A couple months later, my dad couldn't work anymore. He came back again. I said, look, could I make any money? That's how I got into the business.
And you were a big star for a short time. When the 50s craze ended, it kind of ended for you. Patti Page kept singing, but you didn't. What happened there, Fabian?
Oh, I bought out my contract. Is Karen on the phone?
Yes, she is. She's right here.
I am. Hi,
I
Fabian.
I love you, Karen. I love
you. I love you, too.
You got it. You made me feel... I could never blow my own horn, and you did it for me in this book, and you said that, I said I was 75% happy with my career, and the other 25% I wasn't sure of. Well, I'm now up to 95% because of you.
Fabian, after all these years, still only 63 years old, that's a sign of how young you were at the time. Karen Schomer, talk to us about these two artists and what they tell us about the 50s, that time, that music.
Well, it was great to meet both of them. They're both from very different sort of aspects of the 50s. I mean, Fabian was more of a rock and roller, and Patti came from the pre-rock era and was singing pop stuff. But Patti had a lot of swing in her voice. And Patti, I know you did a record of rock and roll songs, and you did them quite well. I think Patti was
a
person...
I did an album of standards, and they sucked.
The honest Fabian.
Patti was the person who pointed out to me that Elvis didn't change the music business as much as I would have thought, somebody who came of age much later just reading rock criticism.
Meaning what?
Well, if I can speak for you or paraphrase you, Patti, you were saying that it was really the Beatles that changed the music business, and that was really... when I think throughout the end of the 50s and the early 60s, pop music was still very, very popular. But I think with the advent of Bob Dylan and the Beatles and the changes of the late 60s, the business really did change. Mm.
Patti Page, Fabian, Karen Schomer, we're going to come back in just a moment and hear a lot more from all of you. We're so glad you're here. We're talking about the teen pop music of the 1950s. Patti Page is with us. Fabian is with us. And Karen Schomer, her new book is Great Pretenders, My Strange Love Affair with 50s Pop Music. You can join us. Did you throw these albums out years ago? Are you sorry? And what's in the heart of this music? Is it from another country? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com. And RHR International, an executive and organizational development firm committed to integrating executives into new roles.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the teen pop music of the 1950s.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that doggy is for sale.
Patti Page, How Much Is That Doggy in the Window? She had 111 singles on the Billboard Top 100 chart, including Mockingbird Hill, Mr. and Mississippi, and Tennessee Waltz. Fabian is with us as well. Most Promising Vocalist, 1959. He's with us today. And Karen Schomer, her new book, Great Pretenders, My Strange Love Affair with 50s Pop Music. Patti Page, help us out here. This song may define the sort of extreme of difficulty of understanding what the 50s were about. I mean, what was that about, that doggy in the window? Who liked that?
I don't know, but it certainly sold. And I think it really wasn't the teens. I think it was those younger than the teens that bought this record.
When you sang it, did you feel silly or did you think, oh, this is catchy?
Well, I thought it was catchy because, I was working so hard in those days, and that the powers that be at Mercury said it was selling. And I believed them, and so I sang it. And when I did sing it, like at the Paramount Theater, et cetera, and all over the country, teens and younger kids were allowed in and so forth, you know, with their parents. And they loved it. And I wasn't going to argue with them. I was too busy to argue.
I'm sure you were. Karen Schomer, you've done your research here. Take us to the point where we understand that. Is it just a cute ditty and people were in the mood for cute ditties? Does it mean that the 50s was just as chipper and innocent as that?
Well, I can really only speak from my own perspective since I wasn't there at the time. How much is that doggy in the window is almost a myth of what the 50s were, because it is so sweet and innocent. And when I listen to it, I just go for the ride and enjoy it for what it is. I think there's, especially nowadays, there's so much dark music and there's so much brutal emotional honesty. And that is now marketed to death. And
it was more of an idealistic time, right, Karen?
Yeah. And really, all of pop music, whether it's hip hop or How Much Is That Doggy in the Window, it's really all just a fantasy that the listener gets to buy into for those few minutes. And I really don't see one of them being better or worse than the other. It's whatever meaning it has for the listener.
Fabian, we hear you there. You say it was a more idealistic time. It could be, you know, almost unbearably pure for adults of a certain age today. Was it really idealistic? Was it, you know, putting the best face? I mean, that was also the time of, what, McCarthy? And we saw Good Night and Good Luck, George Clooney's movie recently. It wasn't all sunshine and picket fences and roses.
No, I don't think so either.
Well, of course it wasn't. But as far as idealistic, as far as the music was concerned, Karen was turned into be the absolute fan and romanticized, and that's what people were doing, and that's what I mean by idealistic. Of course it wasn't a great time. Nobody, you know, actually knew it, especially me at that time at 15 years old. But
it was right after the war, so you have to take that in consideration.
And what did that mean, Patti Page, that it was right after the war? How did that play out?
Well, the 40s were such turbulent time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was over, and people were ready to sit back and relax.
Right.
And I think some of this music helped them do that. And even the innocence of the first rock and roll records. You know, they could feel it. And I think once you can feel music, you've got the answer.
I mean, that's why Karen's so right in her book.
Mm-hmm. I haven't read the book, by the way, Karen.
Oh. I'm sending you one today, Patty.
Karen sat down with Patty Page on her maple sugar farm in New Hampshire. That's quite a story in itself. Our listeners really want in here. Let me bring them. Doug's calling from New York City. Hi, Doug. You're on the air.
Hey. I just want to comment. I feel like I play in a punk band here in New York City, and I feel like that, you know, that music, to me, lyrically, is straightforward. And to me, you know, you can look at how much is that doggy in the window as being punk. You know, it's the attitude of the time, and I think it's the energy was there. And any songwriter I feel that's worth the salt, you know, will go back and listen to those, and maybe you don't get it at first. Maybe you kind of have to check in, like, you know, noise rock or something. But once you kind of get it, it kind of makes sense, and you appreciate it.
Let me interject here.
Yes.
I did I'm a Man by Mort Shuman and Doc Pomus, two of the great all-time songwriters. Karen nailed me perfect. She considered me one of the first punk rockers. I was thrilled.
I think, Doug, you got to go check out Fabian's stuff because you'll hear it.
Let us listen to I'm a Man by Fabian, the punk rocker. Fabian, how old were you singing that song?
I was barely 15 years old.
And you were a man, Doug, in New York? Does that sound like punk rock to you, the beginnings of it?
You know, to me, I don't know. Maybe that's just the same as God Save the Queen, you know? I love it, man. I think it's great. And I think that there's a lot in the music today, you know, there's so much with these hip, cool, like the Strokes and Death Cab for Cutie and stuff. I like to hear influence in music, you know, and I feel like when you go back and you listen to stuff like Fabian stuff, it's there, you know, that energy's there.
Well, you've got it.
When he recorded that, he meant that, you know, and I feel that when you hear it.
We've got it. You can't ignore the energy. It's right there. Doug, thanks very much for your call. Patty Page, Fabian, Karen Schomer, I want to listen to something else here for a minute, if we can. Change the tempo a little bit. I was struck in the selection of things that you put up here, Karen, by Georgia Gibbs' song, Happiness Street, and just how straightforward the emotions were. We're living on Happiness Street, corner Sunshine Square. They never heard of blues, never heard of fear, never heard of woes, never heard of tears. Patty Page, you were speaking to this. Let's listen to Georgia Gibbs and Happiness Street.
On Happiness Street, corner Sunshine Square.
Karen Schomer, it wouldn't seem to get more straightforward than that. It's all about sunshine.
Well, I that's what I've responded to in this music, is not necessarily just the sunshine that's on the surface, but that it's a longing for that. It's a yearning for that kind of simplicity. And in Georgia's voice, I hear a shadow of struggle and pain that she's trying to leave behind. So I don't see these songs as one-dimensional. I see them as having a lot of depth of what's being unspoken.
Patty Page, you were an Oklahoma kid who got swept up into an amazing career here. Was there a community of you all singers at the time? Did you hang out with Fabian and Tommy Sands and Georgia Gibbs, or were you all off on your own tours?
No, I think they felt the same way about my music as the public. No, but
Elvis loved you, Patty. Don't forget.
I know that. So did I.
And his mother did, too. But
Elvis and his mother, too.
Rosie and I used to hang out together.
Who was that? Sorry, Patty?
Rosie Clooney and I.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But then she got married, and then she didn't have time to hang out.
The picket fence went off. In her conversation with you, Karen Schomer gets into how these young singers, yourself included, were represented in those days. There were some pretty tough terms that you sang on. 50% of your take went to your agent for a very long time.
Until the 90s, yes.
And as you described it to Karen, your agent wanted to keep taking that 50% for his kids once you were gone.
Oh, sure.
Wow.
He wanted my pension, too.
Did you feel exploited then, or just lucky to have such a big spotlight?
I felt betrayed, in a way, but I had something to do with that, so I can't blame anybody else for that.
And Fabian,
I just didn't step up and take my shots on my own.
Well, at that age, so young, it would not be easy to do. Fabian, how about for you? You had a lot of film credits here after the singing career, and then the spotlight when the Beatles landed in 1964. The spotlight really went away. What was that like when the spotlight turned off?
When the Beatles came about, I was out of the record business for about 4 or 5 years. I was in the movie business then, but all my buddies, you know, Bobby Rydell, Chubby Checker, Jimmy Darin, Frankie Ford, everything kind of collapsed. You know, I mean, it was basically over at that point, the 50s rock music. It wasn't a very, very happy time. It was a happy time musically because of the Beatles, don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a very unhappy time for a lot of my friends.
Must have been tough for you. I mean, picked up at 15, made into a big name, and then the whole genre goes away.
Yeah, but you know, if you read Karen's book on me, I didn't really care that much. I was in the business just to help out the family, and thank God I came out on top, you know, and was able to help them. And I didn't ever, and I, then I when I decided to get back into the music business and start touring, that was on my own, and I was kind of proud of that.
Yes, doing it on your own, and lucky for you. Let's take a call from Pocatello, Idaho. Linda's on the line. Hi, Linda. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you guys?
We're great.
This is such a fun thing. I'm so excited. I want to tell Patty that I used to have a doggy on my poodle skirt, and I packed around a tune tote with Fabian and Connie and Patty and Ricky and everybody, and we'd all get together and play our little songs at our sleepovers.
I'm glad of that. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I just want to say thanks to all you guys. This is a wonderful program.
Very nice.
And Fabian, we used to do the stroll to
Turn
Me Loose.
Now, what was the stroll, Linda?
The stroll was a... You just kind of made aisles. You put guys on one side and the girls on the other, and then you sort of crisscrossed down. And
it was the rock and roll wedding dance.
Kind of, very much.
Woohoo!
So. Yeah, I like that.
The Macarena of its day, huh?
Yes, yes.
Linda, do you still listen to it, or is it on your back shelf now?
It's pretty much back there, but I'm going to revive it.
Here it comes.
Yes, I am. It's kind of fun. I wish I had all the tunes in my tune.
Hey, Tom, if I can interject here.
Yes, sir.
If you say if people still listen to it, I do a lot of shows.
Yeah.
And I'm
so
going
Pat,
into Branson soon to do a lot more shows at New Dick Clark Theater. And the reason why I'm saying that is that our audiences are very big. And they come out and they are so enthusiastic. And as I always put it, it's like a big reunion for all of us. And as Karen has put it so beautifully in her book, that the memories are overwhelming when they hear the songs.
That
so
is true.
So it's out there. The CDs and all that stuff still sell, you know, at the shows. I know that one said, you know, the collecting dust out there. But some are collecting dust, but some aren't.
Patty Page, you tour a lot as well and perform a lot. What do you see in the audience?
Yes, I do. Well, I see some of the descendants of those people who were standing at the Paramount Theater, which would be the grandmothers and the great-grandmothers. But I get them all. I really do. But most of the younger kids are, you know, from their family that they have been handed down the music, except in the Orient. They're the young college kids that come out.
And worldwide with Patty Page, I know we have to let both of you go. We're very grateful to both of you for being with us. Patty Page, 15 gold records, 4 gold albums. Say what you like. It's sold like hotcakes, and they still show up. Patty Page, thanks very much for joining
us. Thank you so much.
Thank you both. It was great to have you here.
Karen, thank you, my dear.
And Fabian, we love your attitude. What a life story to be picked up at 15 and catapulted into all that. Thanks a lot for sharing some reminiscence and current outlook with us today.
Well, everybody should thank Karen because she knows what a fan is like.
Fabian, I'm writing all of these compliments down, and I'm going to put them on my wall.
Look for them on the next.
So I have them on the days that you're not on the phone.
On the next dust jacket. Fabian, thanks so much for joining us. Karen Schomer, did it work? Did you figure out the heart of your parents' love, what you needed to know?
Well, I think in the end, I probably found out more about myself than I did about them. One really good thing about the book was that it brought me closer, ironically, to my dad, who was somebody that I really hadn't been close to for most of my teens and 20s. And it was a great thing to connect with my dad about and to hear him talk about that time and what his life was like. But ultimately, what I found is that it was kind of revealing a good way. It was a good way to learn about myself. And as a critic, it taught me that, you know, you can try to be objective and act as though you're speaking from on high an objective opinion. But ultimately, I think criticism is personal. And the things that you connect with, for reasons that aren't intellectual. You can't really over-intellectualize the response to music because it's a very kind of primal response. So it was good to learn that, and it was great to have the music show me that just because something isn't intellectually defined as fantastic, that it can still be very moving and have a very lasting impact.
Well, we're grateful too for the book, for getting Patti Page and Fabian on with us today. That's quite a trick for your interviews with all these folks. Pat Boone, another guy you fell in love with big time. Never mind the, yeah, there you were.
They were all really fun to talk to. They were all very honest. They were all real. Nobody was on a high horse, and it was great. It was great, and I'm so glad that you invited them on today, since I haven't spoken to most of them in quite a while.
Well, it's quite the story. Karen Schulmer went out. She talked with Patti Page, Frankie Lane, Pat Boone, Georgia Gibbs, Tommy Sands, Fabian, and Connie Francis. What a lineup. The book is Great Pretenders, My Strange Love Affair with 50s Pop Music. Karen Schulmer, good luck to you. Thanks a lot for being with us today.
Thank you for your interest, Tom. I had a wonderful time.
We will go out with Pat Boone and Stardust. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.